When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I'm gonna tell you something. I'm Star-Lord. I formed the Guardians. Met a girl, fell in love. That girl died, but then she came back. Came back a total dick.
Oh, please.
He left out some important information, but that is the gist of it.
My sacred mission
is to create the perfect society.
He didn't want to make things perfect. He just hated things the way they are.
I want you all to know that I'm grateful to fight beside my friends.
Incinerate them.
Ready for one last ride?
We'll all fly away together
into the forever and beautiful sky.
Whoever it was that you were in love with, it sounds more like her.
Her?
Do not bring me into this.
Don't even.
Knock it off!
What?
Just never noticed how black your eyes were.
They were replaced by my father as a method of torture.
He picked a pretty set.
Marvel's anticipated Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 opens today, and I'm thrilled to welcome the film's production visual effects supervisor, Stefan Ceretti. Stefan has long been a part of the Marvel Universe. He earned Oscar nominations in 2017 for Doctor Strange and 2015 for the first Guardians of the Galaxy. His additional credits include Eternals, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and Avengers Endgame. I'm Carolyn Giardina. Welcome to the Hollywood Reporter's Behind the Screen. Stefan, thank you for joining us and great to talk to you again.
Thanks for inviting me, Carolyn. It's nice to talk to you again.
So what was it like for you to return to the Guardians franchise?
It was super exciting. That's something I'd been looking, forward to for a while. I was very excited to come back and work with James Gunn again. We had been, working on it for a little while. We started in 2018 and then the movie got pushed a little bit and we came back in 2021. And it was just good to come back with the Guardians family, the actors that I had been working with on the first one and also the characters, Groot and Rocket, even though they changed quite a lot. So it was exciting to come back and just revisit and extend the story again and really go deep into the story of Rocket as well.
Well, in this film, which was shot primarily in Atlanta, you again turned to a lot of visual effects vendors, Framestore, Weta. Who were some of your other key vendors?
Yeah, we had Framestore, but Framestore was like spread across, three places. We had Framestore in the UK, Framestore in Montreal, and Framestore in Vancouver. Obviously, Weta was a big part of our team in New Zealand. We had Sony Imageworks that are based in Vancouver as well. We had some vendors in Montreal. We had Rodeo. I'm going to forget a few of them. There's so many. We had about 10 vendors in total, but we had Crafty Apes in Los Angeles. We had Rodeo. We had, I've already talked about them. We have Perception. We had Rise in London, and Beauf in Paris as well, where I started years ago. So they could join and work with us on this one, which was cool.
It's such a big epic adventure. Roughly how many visual effects shots in total did you create for the film?
So there's exactly 3,066 shots in the film, which is a big amount. There's a lot of cuts. I mean, James has really changed his filming style since the first film. And now he's filming, you know, always with a moving camera, and it's very dynamic, and the cuts are very dynamic too. So we had a lot of shots in the film. There's about 3,300 cuts in the film in total. So, it was much more, you know, much more shots than we were used to. But we also have some very long shots. Like we have a 2 minutes, oneer that is just one single big shot. So it's a mixture of super fast cuts and some very long shots as well.
Well, as you mentioned, this story really focuses on Rocket, and we learn a lot more about his backstory. So so let's start there. We meet a very young and, quite frankly, very adorable Rocket.
Yeah.
So let's start with the character animation. Tell us about the research and creating this character, the look and the way Rocket moved.
Yeah. Well, it's we just want to be super realistic, even though we make our characters, our animal characters talk, we always start from a very realistic study of who they are. So we have, you know, obviously raccoons, and we had already studied raccoons quite a lot when we did the first one. I have a picture of James in my office in Pinewood in England years ago, holding a little baby raccoon. And I've shown that picture to everybody, you know, at Framestore, because it's what we wanted it to be, you know. It's just that little creature. And so the guys at Framestore are really good at this kind of thing. So they studied raccoons, you know, they already had done that on the first one. We already started from a real anatomical raccoon and then modified it to our needs to create Rocket Raccoon. But so all that study that they had done, and some people that were on the first film were also on this one, and or helped the team that were on this one at Framestore. And we really looked at a lot of videos of baby raccoons. I mean, they're so adorable and so crazy at the same time. They're very, very cute creatures. So we had a lot of studying to do on that. But we had, you know, the otter, Lila. We had a walrus, and we had a rabbit. That actually has, you know,
Rocket's
legs that are like
three friends.
Yeah, the three friends that are in the cages with him. And we also had all the other animals that we see at the end of the film. So it was a big kind of endeavor to create all these animals. But Rocket himself, because we had to see him evolve throughout the film, we had different stages of his evolution. And also, you know, starting from a real raccoon, a real little kid, to a slightly more evolved raccoon, but also a raccoon that gets experimented on. So we had to go through all the different stages of his growth as an animal, but also of the experimentations that are made on his body. So we knew what the end result had to be, because we had seen Rocket in the first film, in that scene in the showers, in the kiln, in the prison. You see the back, you know, his back, you see all the implants he had on his back, and you kind of get a glimpse at what happened to him during his youth. And now we had to elaborate on all these stages and see how he came to become that person. So that was something that we really worked with the VisDev department at Marvel. Obviously, James had very specific phases, and every scene was written at a different stage of his evolution. So we had to kind of portray all of these modification in a very timely way, especially, you know, all the extra contraption he's getting on his body that will be going away after he's grown. You know, we had to factor in how the ribcage grows, all these things. It was pretty complex, but it was such a big integral part of the story that, you know, for us, we really wanted to get that very precisely made for the film.
Also, he's so expressive. His eyes, there is so much emotion in his eyes. Would you talk about how you did that? That's such a, you know, specific yeah. and really difficult thing to do.
I mean, especially for this film, because there's a lot of close-ups in this film. And we open the movie with a very extreme close-up of the eyes of the baby raccoon. And then we transition to Rocket. And it was so important that we get that detail correct. And I came back to what we did on the first film, where we really tried to keep it as animalistic as possible. So really what we looked at, you know, adding a lot of detail, obviously, also the fur seen from very, very close up is extremely complicated, but also the wetness in the eyes, all these things, you know, seeing almost the tear ducts but also keeping the animalistic nature of a raccoon, which they have eyes that are really black, really dark, and you don't see the white that much. You only see it when they really look at, you know, very raking angles. But most of the time when they look around, they just turn their heads. They don't really look around with their eyes as much as humans do. And it was really important for us to just keep that animalistic feel so that the audience could really relate to that character as an animal that was being, you know, abused to some degree. And that makes it even more, you know, difficult or, you know, more emotive for the audiences. So it was really trying to keep it as real as possible so that it felt as emotional as possible.
What were some of the instructions that, you know, James Gunn talked about and the two of you talked about as far as what you wanted to do with Rocket?
Well, I mean, we talked a lot about him. It was mostly about, you know, we wanted to get, that's the heart of the movie. I mean, all these sequences are the heart of the movie. That's the story we're trying to tell. The evolution of Rocket and how he came to be and how, you know, by the end of the film, you know, whatever happens to him. So it was, for James, James was very involved in every step of the way. We just did, you know, a lot of tests with the faces. We did a lot of design with the faces, the eyes, as you said, animation tests. He's very involved in the acting. And that's why we wanted to, when we shot the sequences with Rocket, obviously we always have Sean gone with us for when we're on set. So that gives us an extremely good reference of what we need to do. And Sean is great at these things. He's also great at not just being on set as a, you know, a character for blocking, but he's actually acting with all the other actors. And, you know, we were very precise in terms of even matching eye blinks and eye direction, obviously a very big thing for James, but just the emotion that we're getting out of Sean's acting was enormous. So it's really what James wants us to follow as much as possible every time we shoot with the actors. Other than that, you know, it was about making sure we could look at that creature and never think that he's a CG character, you know? So really working on integrating him into the space, making sure that they would interact with the space, like in the cages. It's very dirty in the cages. We actually built real cages on set, and the set dresser actually put a lot of dirt and a lot of little things everywhere, pellets. She was looking at me and she was like, she's called Rosemary. And she was like, Steph, you're not going to like this. And I said, the opposite. I love this because that gives us a physicality that we need to get. You know, we need to feel that these characters are interacting with their environment, and having, you know, all that stuff around them is really helping us sell that they're here. We actually recreated all this environment in CG, but we could photograph it and really recreate it as realistically as possible. So all of these things, all these elements, having dust in their fur, you know, all these things that really add to the realism when you're so close to them and you spend so much time with them. It was very important for that. The other thing that James, you know, we discussed with, as we're doing animation blocking and working with frame stories, the level of animation, and that was something we always talked about, even on the first film, is that James, the first thing he told me when I started on volume one was, I don't want Rocket to be Bugs Bunny in the middle of the Avengers, meaning the animation needs to be realistic, simple, elegant, not overdone. And for all these scenes with the four little animals in the cages, we really paid attention to making sure that they were just moving and talking in a very simple, humanistic way and never becoming a cartoon character. Because again, it was all about the emotion level that we want to get out of it. And the more real it is, the more emotion you get, the more you relate to these characters. If they were just cartoons, you wouldn't feel the same level of emotion for them. So that was a big part of our discussions with Framestore all the time, you know, going through all of that stuff. We do a reference shoot with motion capture, but actually the motion capture we used was only for the cameras, because we wanted the cameras to move the same way they do in the rest of the film because of Jane's very specific way of covering the action and very specific way of moving his cameras. We wanted to absolutely acquire this so we wouldn't have to guess any of this stuff. But in terms of the animation, we referenced the blocking and the acting of the actors we had on set, but we did not do motion capture. It's all of it is hand animated. You know, body, face, everything. So it's a lot of animation work and very precise animation work done by the guys at Framestore. We had four actors. All four actors were here.
Sean Gunn played Rocket.
Yes, exactly. And then we had Linda Cardellini was playing Lila. And Mihaela Hoover, I can never say her name. It's difficult for me to say it in English. Was playing Floor, the little rabbit. And then Asim was playing the walrus thieves. And actually, Asim was in a, we put him in a wheelchair so that he could get the physicality of being there, you know, as the walrus is in, as these wheels attached to his body. So we tried to get the physicality as much as possible. We created us an oversized, you know, cages environment. It was very simple. There was no finishing or anything. It was just for them to know where the walls were and where the separation between the cages were. And they could hold the bars, and the bars were exactly built at the same distance as they would be in the real set. And they played everything together. The full scenes, every scene that you see in the cages was shot in that environment for the first 2 days of the film.
Well, let's also talk about Groot. In the second film, we saw a very young Groot, and now he's grown up.
Yes.
So yes. Tell us about creating his character this time around.
Well, that was interesting. So I came on the show, and James showed me how Groot had evolved. And the last time I had seen him, I think, was in Thor Love and Thunder. We were still that very, you know, limpy kind of teenager, you know, and then you see him, and now he's like all grown up and muscular, and it was a big difference. But he still has this kind of little baby face, in a way. So there's that kind of cute kind of like mixture of things where he's that very swole guy. We were calling him Swole Groot, but he still is so nice, and his big eyes and everything. So he's got that sweetness into him, but he's very badass in the movie. He does a lot of action. So, and James, the way he described Groot to me, he said, yeah, now Groot now is a, you know, he was a very difficult teenager, but he's now a cool young, you know, young adult. Like he's the nice guy. Who plays football, and you know, he's like, yeah, I remember, could you, I said, James, can you just mime him for me or what he does? And James, I have said that video of James, and he's like, oh yeah, he's always excited about everything. So he was kind of bouncing and being happy. And so that was good. And that's why you see him, you know, in the Christmas special that we did at the same time as we did the film. The Christmas special was 600 shots on top of the 3,000 we had to do for the film. But he's dancing now. He's, you know, he's more liberated. He's a very nice little, I mean, I guess he was dancing in the second one, but you see him as an adult still dancing and being very fun. But at the same time, you know, you get a few surprises on how good he is at fighting now. He's back at being that badass Groot that we had seen earlier in the first film.
You also had some very challenging environments to create in the movie.
Yes.
Which one would you put top of mind?
Well, we had, I think the most kind of creatively challenging was definitely it's the Orgoscope. It's the meat planet on which they land, which was such a weird concept. You know, the first time I saw the concept done by Beth Mickle, our production designer, I was like, okay, well, that's going to be easy. And we had to look at a lot of that was not a film that vegan visual effects supervisor would like working on, because we had to look at a lot of meat, you know, reference and see how the surfaces were squishy, how to interact with our actors. And we shot on a very simple squishy surface and in front of a black screen. Actually, we were shooting in front of a black screen, and we had these the actors kind of just, you know, being on top of that very weird surface. So we wanted to convey the idea that, you know, everything was kind of tactile and very, very real, and you could touch the things and it would feel squishy and you would interact with it. And also they had to kind of cut through the surface of that planet to get inside the augoscope. So there's that always disgusting description that James, you know, gives us, like this, they cut a part of the meat and pull it out, and there's like liquid attached to it. It's all very disgusting, but, you know, again, tactile. He was calling it the pus sandwich. It's just kind of disgusting, but that was a good description of it. It's just that it was a lot of work, and getting all these textures to really, you know, work very well and feel real and feel tactile and interactive for the actors. All of that stuff was quite complicated and creatively challenging. And then we get inside the place, and there's like these orbs that have the recordings of Rocket, and it's all very kind of, again, tactile and made of bones and flesh and all kind of stuff that, you know, you can only come out of the brain of James Gunn. So yeah, it was quite complex, but I mean, we had a lot of complicated environment in the film, you know. It's a very demanding shot, demanding film in terms of the variety of things we had to cover.
Would you like to also tell us about the big winner?
Well, yeah, I mean, that one was quite something. It's a big scene that happens in a corridor in the Arete, which is the spaceship of the High Evolutionary. And I mean, I won't tell you all the detail, but it's a 2 minutes long sequence that is the fight with all the guardians together fighting against a bunch of crustacean robots. And it was very complicated. I mean, it took us 3 days to shoot this. And it took stunts quite a few months to kind of elaborate it, working with James, and Wayne Dalglish was the stunt coordinator for that, or fight coordinator for this sequence. It's one shot. Obviously, it's a stitch of different shots that we had shot across the 3 days. And it's a big mixture of like real element shot with the actors, then going into full CG. Sometimes the actors are CG, the stunts are CG. Then we connect to other cameras in different places. It's a very elaborate sequence done by Weta in New Zealand. And they really worked on it. We worked on it for almost a year in post-production, because we turned that over really early. And they had to do all these kind of super complex, you know, handover between real stuff that we had shot, digital environment, camera floating everywhere, all of that to create that continuous 2 minutes fight in rhythm with the music, because it plays with the song. And then every beat of the song is there's something happening in the frame. So we had to really marry the animation with the soundtrack. And it was so complicated. It really took us almost a year to finish that. We shot everything at 120 frames per second so that we could, you know, do time changes and go into slow-mo and go back into high speed. So it was really complicated, because we wanted to give James as much flexibility in terms of timing the events. So I know Weta actually match moved the entire 2 minute sequence, which actually shot at 120 frames per second, is 6 times longer. And so we had to match move all these frames and then do the re-speed, the animation. It was really complicated. They did a great job on that. And I think it's quite a high point in the movie.
It's a great sequence.
Yeah, it's a great sequence. And people really, every time people watch it, like, you know, we've done a few test screening and we've shown it to a few people, and people are like, oh my God. There was at the premiere last week, there was like cheers at the end. It was really fun to see the reaction.
Now, you've worked with some of these actors before from the first one, like Chris Pratt. What are they like to work with on set?
Oh my God, they're all so nice, actually. It really is a family. The only one I had never worked with is Pom, who does Mantis, because I had not done Volume 2. And she's French, so we got along very well really quick. But they're such a great family, and they know their stuff, you know, and they love James. They trust him implicitly and, you know, very deeply. And we had so much fun shooting it, and we had so much fun and so much sadness at the end, because, I mean, the last couple of days, especially the last day, was very emotional, where we're all finishing the last few scenes and saying goodbye to everybody. We're all crying like babies on the last stage, you know, because we knew we wouldn't do it again. It was good. And I mean, they're all great people, and they're so good at what they do. And they really help us, you know, the visual effects people, because they really, you know, they know what the result is going to be, and they trust us too. And they give it their full collaboration, and they understand the process. They work with us all the time, and it's really good, because they, you know, our characters and everything we do wouldn't work without the actors trusting it, you know. So it's very important, and these guys are so good at what they do. So that really helps us sell what we're doing on our side, you know. These actors are great. They understand, and we are here to give them everything they need to give us everything we will need later down the line. So it's a good collaboration.
Now, you described everyone as a family. At what point in this did you find out that James Gunn was moving on to DC, and how did that affect finishing the film?
It really just happened in post-production, pretty much at the same time as they announced it. I mean, there was little rumors, obviously, but the confirmation came, you know, pretty much at the time they announced it. And he started to work for DC as we were in post, obviously, but James would never abandon us. I mean, never, ever, ever, ever. That's his baby. Right. He's been wanting to do this movie for a while, and it's so important for him. And we had full access to him. He was there with us all the time. And James is a, you know, he knows how to work remotely. We were working remotely even before that, because of, you know, the way we were setting up for post-production. But he's very present. I can text him or call him anytime I have a question. He will answer in the, you know, in the next few minutes, and it will clarify everything. We had him with the vendors, especially with Weta, for the final battle. He was there all the time to discuss animation and all these things. James is very involved, and is very precise. And I mean, this movie was scripted and shot without changing one line of script. We edited the film. I mean, the edit was really good from the get-go. It was very stable. All we spent our time doing was making it better and not changing it, you know. And we had a very linear process, which for visual effects is extremely important. And I think that's a big part of, you know, how it came out in the end, is that we had the time, and we had the dedication of the director, and his knowledge is very good at visual effects. He understands all our concerns, and he pushes us all the time, as he should. But it's always a huge collaboration, and there is a lot of respect involved into making the film. So it was, I think, for the vendors, it was a really good experience. I don't want to talk for them, but I'm sure if you can talk to them, you'll get that same feeling, is that it was really a good collaboration, and we tried to be respectful of everybody's needs and timely expectations in terms of notes and, you know, ideas and all that stuff. So we really worked as we should to make it the most linear and, you know, process, and moving forward all the time, trying not to go backwards or not to change ideas too many times, just making it everything better as we were moving forward.
Now, I realize this happened at the tail end of post, but how or were you affected by Victoria Alonso parting ways with the studio?
You know, it's always a sad thing when you see someone you've worked with for years going away, and that's someone that you respect and that you really enjoy working with. The truth is, our film being done by James, there was a little less implication from the studio. She was looking at everything we're doing every week, and there was very little notes coming from her because things were going very well. And, you know, as I said, we had a very good process with James of approval and making the film that he wanted to do and all that stuff. So because there was no problem on the production, she was not that involved, obviously, not that she's just involved where there's problems, but obviously she will pay more attention when there's issues. And we didn't really have any issues. It didn't affect us in terms of affecting the production. It affected us emotionally, but not on a production level, I would say. It is what it is.
Another question I just wanted to ask you quickly about the tail end of post was, mm-hmm. driven by James, you created about 600 versions for the theater. He had a few different aspect ratios and yes. combinations of 2D and 3D that he wanted to do to support each type of theater, in addition to, of course, you know, things like, you know, the different sound systems, local languages,
exactly,
and things like
exactly.
that. So how did that impact your process and the visual effects specifically?
Well, it didn't that much, actually, and I'm going to tell you why. Again, just to come back to why this is a very linear production, is that it was designed this way from the get-go for us. You know, when we were shooting, we knew that James had already laid out an hybrid aspect ratio for the film. So we knew which sequences would be in 240 and which sequences would be in 189. So that was all laid out as we were shooting already. So framing was done according to this. So in that sense, we always deliver full frame anyways. In terms of visual effects, we deliver the one, you know, the correct aspect, the full frame aspect ratio. So 189 in that case. So it didn't really affect us. There was, when we started doing, so we have a 240 timeline, then we have an hybrid timeline, then we have a full 189 timeline. So because that's the three formats we're really working with. When we ended up doing the 240 timeline, which was cropping some of the shots that were designed in 189, there was some reframe involved. There's a few shots we had to actually redo a 240 version for, because the framing of the shot, like in space or everything, was not working in 240. So we pushed things away, redid the lensing, and then re-rendered a couple of shots, but it wasn't that many actually. It's just a lot of versions to carry, you know, for editorial and for post production, especially when you start having, you know, all these hybrid formats and the 3D version, the EDR version, the Dolby Vision. So it's a lot of, you know, once you've done your three master kind of framing version, then all of them stem into a myriad of different versions that all need to be, you know, QC'd, so quality controlled and everything. So I've been watching this movie quite a bit in the last couple of weeks, all the different versions, and you have to do the DI for the, you know, the normal version, then the 2D EDR, then the 3D EDR, then the 3D IMAX, and the 2D IMAX, and it's a lot of versions that we have to carry.
And I understand Stefan Sonnenfeld came on as the colorist.
He did,
for this
yeah.
Fun,
it
right?
was really great with Stefan because it's, you know, he had also been color grading all the trailers. So which is kind of unique because usually you get someone else to do the trailers and then the film colorist comes at the end. But here, because James wants to work with Stefan, we have Stefan for every step of the way. And we had done some, you know, pre-grades earlier. So we knew where we were going. So the DI process was extremely streamlined. And we made sure that as soon as they started the DI, they had a version for every shot. And we finished delivering, QC version as we were finishing the DI, but it was pretty smooth and they could color the film very efficiently. And Stefan is very, he's very good and very quick, and he's very organized. Like his timelines for DI are extremely well organized, and he's got already all the maths prepared, and we give him maths, and everything is very, very well, prepared.
Well, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 opens today. You must be thrilled to be getting this out to theaters so audiences yes. can enjoy it.
Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how people are going to react. It's quite a film. It's very emotional, very funny. I think it's got everything for itself, and it's just like it's a nice way to kind of finish the trilogy and get everybody on their on the end of their stories. And I love these characters. I'm sad to see them, you know, finishing. And maybe we don't know what's going to happen with them, but it won't be, I don't think it will be with James again. We'll see what happens. But it's an emotional send off for all of us. And I think the audiences will really feel that and enjoy it too.
Well, congratulations on your fantastic work, and it was great to talk to you again. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Caroline.